Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Bo, if you could talk to anybody about the Wild West of consumer privacy and reigning in big tech, who would you talk to?
Mark Zuckerberg.
Really?
Yeah, 100%. I would try to hurt his feelings. But if I couldn't do that, I guess I would talk to Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Well, as luck would have it, that's exactly who we're talking to this week.
No. No, that's true. She's in the waiting room right now.
Wait, really? Let her in.
There we go.
You're there.
I am here. How are you? Delighted to be here.
And with that, welcome to What the Hack, the true cybercrime podcast. I'm Adam Levin.
I'm Bo Friedlander.
And I'm Travis Taylor.
Today we have U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren, and I think we can all agree that she's been a trailblazer, fighting for economic reform, fighting for consumers. She's the creator of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is really a monumental achievement. And now she's working on something new. It's called the Digital Consumer Protection Commission Act.
We have been talking about this ad nauseum. There ought to be a law.
Yeah, I mean, reining in big tech is a huge priority, or at least it should be.
And today we're going to learn all about everything that Senator Warren is doing to make that happen. Senator Elizabeth Warren, welcome to What the Hack.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
So, Senator, you and Senator Lindsey Graham introduced bipartisan legislation known as the Digital Consumer Protection Commission Act. Now, are there parallels between the mission of the CFPB and the DCPCA?
That's a really good question, and good to see it this way, because think about what the problem was that caused us to develop the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. You had all of these companies that were developing different financial products, and basically nobody with the expertise to kind of see them all and get a regulatory framework in place. Instead, what happened is you'd work and you'd get an answer to one problem. That is, you know, we'd pass some legislation maybe that would take a little slice of what was happening on credit cards or a little piece of what was happening on payday loans. But no single regulator who kind of saw, you know, all these pieces sort of fit together. They have a lot of the same problems, some differences, develop expertise. And that's what we need in the tech area right now. Too many people are approaching the problems presented in the tech industry by saying, oh, over here, we've got a problem with targeting our kids. And then somebody else says, no, over here, we've got a problem that the big platforms are stealing the content from the news folks. Oh, no, over here, we've got a problem of scooping up your private information for purposes of being able to monetize it and sell it to advertisers. So you've got problems that look disparate, and Congress kind of, oh, let's come over here, no, let's rush over there, and they end up doing nothing as a result. And we had exactly the same kind of thing going on in the consumer area. And I make a second pitch too, and that is, it's just too damned hard to get legislation passed that basically would benefit a lot of consumers, but might cost some giant corporation some profits. Because look at the asymmetry there. The giant corporation says, whoa, you know, that could nip into my profits by 2%. Well, 2% could still be hundreds of millions of dollars. So it is totally worth it to them to come to Washington and to lobby like crazy and to build an army of people to pound down the doors of every senator and every representative. And who's out there doing that on the consumer side? You know, last I looked, most people known as consumers actually have lives to live. and they have, you know, kids to get off to school in the morning, and they've got car repairs to think about, and they've got whole lives. So you end up with this complete asymmetry, even though altogether consumers would be benefited to the tune of billions of dollars or just a world they like better. It's hard to get that through Congress. So part of what this is about, just like it was over the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, is that you fight one big fight, I mean one giant fight, and then you get an agency in place that can deal with a lot of different problems at once. And the rulemakers don't get picked off by the lobbyists. And frankly, why do I know that works? It's because I look over at the CFPB and I see it working every day. I watch what Rohit Chopra does and what the CFPB folks do. And I see how they listen to the American people. They listen to the folks who are on the ground. They have that wonderful consumer complaint hotline, and they use it as a way to understand, oh, looks like we've got a problem on check overdraft fees. And by golly, collected the data, did the study then, and put a new rule in place that literally will save consumers billions of dollars a year. But we don't have anything like that in the tech space. Everything in that space is the giants monetizing every aspect of every piece of every wrinkle of every corner. What happens that might have a tech connection? And we got to get some balance back in this system. And that's what our Digital Consumer Protection Commission is all about.
Senator, big tech, speaking of a world we like better, we would like better, big tech has the ability to do many things, but no motivation to do the right thing. What's the baseline for a decent digital nation? How will DCPCA move the needle with regard to the most pressing issues like moderating child sexual abuse material, hate speech, and maybe also doing something about disinformation and what the damage that's doing to our society?
So think of it this way. Right now, big tech has one humongous driving, overriding incentive, and that's money. Just how can we monetize it? How can we make an extra $1 billion? How can we make an extra penny? That is the organizing principle for everything. And whenever you see them, oh, but they've given money to the local softball team, or they are foregoing doing something, believe me, it's still driven by money. They just figure, you know, if I splash a little money on this group, then maybe they will be my friends. If I forego a little money over here, a little revenue over here, maybe nobody will come and do serious regulation of any kind. So, okay. So in one corner, we have a group of decision makers who are totally driven by money. And the idea is you build an agency that actually can be driven by our values. And it has a chance to listen not just to the people who will profit from more money, but a chance to listen to parents, a chance to listen to people who are worried about what's going to happen because of disinformation, what will happen with our elections, a chance to open up the conversation. Let me say it this way. There are a lot of folks who say, oh, but I'm worried about the government making those decisions. I understand that. Those are powerful decisions. But don't pretend that the alternative is nobody makes those decisions. Those decisions are being made today. They're just being made in back rooms where you don't get to see it and you don't get any input. And what I want is I want it out there much more transparently, where the issues are in front of us, where people can weigh in on them, and where we can begin to build some curbs in what is in and what is out. So that's part of it. But if I can, I want to add a second piece that you some people might not think about, and that is this bill has a commission, but it also steps up the antitrust laws. It strengthens them. And the idea behind it is to say, look, so long as there's only Apple, so long as there's only Google, so long as there's only Amazon, then there's going to be one way of doing business. And you can take it or leave it, and that's how it's going to be. It not only drives up prices, it reduces innovation, but the very core of competition is just absent. So think about if there were a lot of different platforms that you could decide that all of your electronics were going to be on. You could pick your platform, and you had complete interoperability, like you do with your telephone. You know, I can call you and you can call me. We had complete interoperability. I might see the parent of teenage children, young teenagers, saying, you know what? I'm willing to pay a few bucks a month. I want a platform that's going to screen content in the following ways. And if there's a market for that, that market can emerge. I might be willing to pay to say, you know, I want to go to a place where I think they've really stepped up security so that the odds that my work is going to be hacked and I'm going to be hijacked, it has really been reduced. I might decide that I prefer to keep myself on a platform where they do more on hate speech and they just screen it out. If you're being really ugly, they just take you off the site. And I raise all that by way of saying, look how passive we've all become. We just kind of let X decide what's going to move in front of our eyes. We let Google decide what's going to move. If we have more competition and more ability to pick the kinds of products we like in the tech world, if they were more subdivided for us, it actually reduces the pressure on the first part, and that is the commission. If you can give parents more avenues for where they may want to go with their young children, then you have less need for government to do it, that is a government regulator, and yet you're not simply leaving it to one guy who's off in a dark room and making a decision based on what will drive up revenue for the company. So it's got both pieces, the commission and the stepped up antitrust rules that give more competition. And I think of that as, I didn't give you an answer on this is what the individual piece should look like. The answer I'm giving you is a structural answer. This is the structure we need to be able to build answers in a lot of different areas that will better serve all of us.
So Bo and Adam, you guys know I'm a bit of a privacy geek, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, totally. I really just don't like the idea that just about anyone can find you online, can find out where you live or your email address or your phone number or anything. I just think that entire idea is super creepy.
There's so much of my data already out there, but is there something that you can do?
Yeah, actually, you can use Delete Me. Delete Me is a service that pretty much does the heavy lifting for you, where they go to all the data brokers that they have on file. And just pull your data and delete it on a regular basis.
I use it. I like it. And they make it quick, easy, and safe to remove your personal data online.
Well, yeah, with these data brokers, they can accumulate huge amounts of your personally identifiable information. And if all that information gets into the hands of a bad actor, that opens you up to a lot of risk.
And if you act now, you can get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/WTH and use promo code WTH. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/WTH and enter promo code WTH at checkout.
That's joindeleteme.com/WTH, promo code WTH, which stands for What the Hack. And we thank you for supporting Delete Me and What the Hack.
So how can the DCPCA limit the self-preferencing with big tech companies like, say, Meta or Apple or Google or Amazon? How do you rein in the way that they've, at this point, favored their own offerings in a monopolistic way?
Oh, break them up? I mean, look, we're going to put the tools in place and they can decide. Now, I'm just going to give you my own view on the right thing to do here. Is that if you just break those pieces apart and say, look, you can be the platform. You can be the marketplace. Have at it, Amazon. And you can make money doing that. I mean, let's face it. They make buckets and buckets of money just running the marketplace, right? You can do that, or you can be a competitor in the marketplace. That is, you can sell diapers and light bulbs and boofahs of all kinds. You can do one or you can do the other, but you don't get to do both. You don't get to umpire the baseball game and have a team in the league at the same time. You just can't do that.
So structurally, you're talking about something that's a bridge farther than compliance, really.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Advertising is, you know, where this goes for me, because I think a lot about privacy, and advertising used to target general market sectors because it was, you know, created for broadcast.
Yeah.
And that's how it had to work. Now, in the narrowcast environment of online media, where do you draw the line regarding consumer privacy?
I have a slightly different view of this. I think that targeted advertising can be valuable. I have special needs. I want the things that appeal to me. I buy shoes online. Kids don't go into the store anymore because, I don't know, partly because I don't have time, partly because I'm a little hard to fit. It's fine with me to get ads for that. For me, it's about two parts. One is the transparency. I think that we ought to have access to how it is that this ad showed up in this place. I think that partly this is something that the consumer agency can do. Why are these people getting targeted with this ad? And why are these people getting targeted with that ad? And if it's because I have bought shoes online before, you know, I'm fine with that. If it's something else about me, maybe I'm not so fine with that. So I think that's part of the answer. But I think the other part of the answer is we just need broader rules overall about privacy. And notice how it's become an advertising issue, because privacy is all about monetizing now. How do we monetize? How do we figure out how to make money off what we know about you? And of course, as you know now, you all have done more than one show around this, how the data now intersect and become so much more valuable, because knowing that here are my three news sources and that I buy shoes online and that I shop in these two grocery stores and you can know a whole lot more about me, that not only somebody who's trying to sell shoes might pay a lot to get access to me, and somebody who's trying to sell news might get access to me, but someone who's also trying to sell a political candidate might work that to try to get access. And I say this by way of saying we need transparency around how that's working. I don't want to, it's not that I want to bar it. I just want people to be able to see it and see what's being used. And we need to start with the premise that information about you belongs to you. It doesn't belong to someone else. And if you start with that, then the idea that they can collect information now, I think, should shift pretty dramatically. And this is a part about how I see the agency working, is taking a much tougher stand on exactly what information can be scraped and then what information can be aggregated.
So now the DCPCA requires dominant platforms to be owned by either a U.S. citizen or a U.S. subsidiary. TikTok's been described as a portal into America's homes. It's Chinese owned. How worried should we be about foreign-owned big tech?
So look, we've had rules for a long time about foreign ownership of communications. You remember that TV stations and radio stations have to be owned domestically, because long before big tech came along and was as sophisticated as it is, back when it used to have to do those generalized ads that you were talking about, we are still concerned about foreign interest owning our communications here in the United States. So I get it. I get that we have legitimate concerns about the Chinese government's access to our privacy data. But can I do a but in capital letters here? The idea that we think, that somebody seems to think, that shifting the ownership of TikTok solves the problem just seems to me to be astonishingly naive. First of all, there's corporate structure. There are a lot of ways to do shell corporations and still maintain a lot of access to the control of a business. But the other part of it is that any company that can scrape all that private information and bundle it up and monetize it and sell it wherever they want to sell it, are you quite sure they are not selling it to a foreign country, to an adversary, to for all kinds of nefarious ends? So the action that troubles me here is the amount of personal data that they're allowed with no constraints. The personal data that they're allowed to scrape up and package together. And the only limits on what they do is how much money they think they can make from it. So I do not sleep well at night knowing what these giant platforms currently can and are doing. And I will not sleep better to say, oh, but there's going to be a change in the corporate ownership of TikTok. I just don't think that makes it better. I understand the foreign ownership point, but for me, it's all about the data. And that's the part we need to deal with.
Well, I mean, Cambridge Analytica showed us that it really doesn't matter where the company is, you can buy the data. So
yeah.
You're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, it's still going to happen. And that gets back to this question about structure that you were talking about in the beginning. If you can define the structure and the game, then you can actually start predicating how people move around, and almost like a chessboard. So one question that I think is looming large these days is, how will AI, large language models, be policed, not only for criminal applications of technology, but in general? I mean, how is this current legislation looking at AI and what can be done to make sure that it's used for good, making the world a better place?
So let me start with, there is no AI exception to the law. So if you use AI at your company, let's say you're a credit card issuer, and you use AI, and the consequence of using AI is you discriminate based on race against your customers and how you're pricing your products, you don't get to say, oh, but it was AI. Everybody still has to follow the law. AI is not an exception to the law. It's not some magical thing that falls from the sky. So my view on this is, I just start with the demystifying of AI. I don't care what tools you use. I don't care what algorithms you use. You're still bound by all of the laws that we have in place. And that's true. It's showing up right now in the things around financial products. That's where I've seen it already. But the second thing is to say, this is one of the things that our new Digital Consumer Commission would have jurisdiction over, and that is the use of AI. And again, putting some curbs in place and some reminders about what people can do. But I'll add the second part. It's also the antitrust portion of this. I am deeply concerned about, as we start to develop AI, are we just going to end up with three mega corporations that are the only three and they use AI, and everybody else who wants to use it has to plug in to their use, follow their protocols? Are we just going to build three walled gardens in the world? Or is it going to be two? Or is it going to be one? But the point is, again, we got to get these pieces apart. And I understand there's a lot of reason to think about it's going to take a lot of dollar investment to get maximum benefit out of AI. But the idea that AI is going to be owned like a giant that is already engaged in self-preferencing and all of the benefits of vertical integration and all of the benefits of scraping your data at 10 different levels and reaccumulating it to understand you better than you understand you, I think that's not the direction we should go. And that takes me to a point I just want to underscore. And that is, why big tech right now is different from everything else in America in the following sense. In any other industry in America, if you injure somebody, one of two things is true. Either you get sued in a court, or you have a regulator who's on you like a duck on a June bug, right? June, right down on you. One or the other, not big tech. And the idea that these giant platforms have grown up, think about that, in a world where they don't have any accountability. Nothing in our legal system holds them to account. Now, look, they are subject to some, as we were saying earlier, AI is still subject to rules. You can't discriminate. There are some other rules, but Section 230 has created this zone of activity that for these giant platforms now means, man, they go where they want to go. So one of the features, we were talking structure a second ago, one of the features of this bill is it separates the giants from everybody else. You want to run a small platform, you want to run a platform, you know, which are PTA, and you want to, you know, run it and people can come on, and even bigger than that, you can build out bigger things. That's not where the worry is. The worry is with the giants. And so the agency is designed to do two things. It sets up some gold standards for everybody. It just says, for example, here's what data security looks like. And we'll keep updating that. And so long as you have done what is the gold standard, you're free and clear. Okay, you've protected your customers. You don't have liability. And that would be a big step up for a lot of businesses to be able to get that advantage. But then it says if you're one of the giants, you have to undergo much more scrutiny, and that's what the commission is really about. Commission will be updating the kind of what I think of as the generalized rules, the hygiene rules, but the more aggressive rules are just for the giant, because the giants are out there making these decisions right now, and they're making them to help themselves. I want somebody to make the decisions that are going to help the rest of us.
Well, Senator, we cannot thank you enough for the time you gave us and the fight that you're leading. Thanks again.
I appreciate it. I appreciate all you guys are doing. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. You know, transparency has come up several times here, and I can't help but think that you can get a better pair of shoes, the shoes that you need, especially if the shoes you need are particular, if you can see what advertisers see, if you can see what kind of information they have, and then maybe even have the ability to edit it. What do you think of that, Adam?
We don't know the decisions they're making, what kind of information they have, so we're kind of in a bump.
I think that we can all agree there is a world we would like better than the one we currently have online.
And we need that world sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Senator Warren raised some interesting points about transparency and the ability to understand the information that big tech and advertisers have access to here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to consider how much control we have over our online data and the decisions that are made based on that information. If we want to create a better online world, we need to be involved in that.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that was really striking was, unlike the CFPB, which at the end of the day is about compliance, really, this is monopoly busting. This is just saying, no, sorry, you don't get to. This is like Ma Bell when I was a kid.
Without question, this legislation is going to take on the issue of compliance. But there's a much bigger issue out there. It's the elephant in the room, and that's the monopolistic practices of all of these organizations where they're the platform, they're the seller, they're the creator. How do you compete against folks like that?
You know, in the elephant in a room anywhere in my house, the house is already destroyed. The elephant has no place in my home.
It wouldn't fit. No.
It would fit at the expense of everything else. And that is kind of unimaginable to me. But I guess at the end of the day, what government is supposed to do, right? Government is supposed to facilitate a world I like better. I don't like the current digital world I live in. I don't like it at all. And if this can change it, like, actually, you know who I think could, if you were to like be like, Bo, who do you think could change this? One of the first names out of my lips would be Senator Warren.
And an important thing, too, is that if anyone, as you said, can do it, the senator can do it. And She used to tell the story about the fact when she was fighting to create the CFPB, her first call was with a person. And then there were three or four more people, and then many more. And then ultimately, a coalition was formed both in the public and with fellow legislators. And it took her a long time to get it, but she did get the CFPB. And I think that's been a real game changer for consumers.
No doubt.
Yeah, and just in the same way as with the CFPB, transparency is super critical in holding powerful companies accountable and ensuring that consumers are getting protection in the digital sphere and online. I think the DCPCA underscores the need for like a lot more transparency and a lot more oversight of these platforms.
Meta, Amazon, Google, Apple, I mean, these companies wield significant influence over our lives, from data privacy to content moderation. And we deserve to know how our data is collected, used, and monetized.
Transparency ultimately extends to the algorithms that are driving these platforms, and those platforms are shaping the information we're seeing and the decisions that are being made about us.
Well, you know, the senator did say that these decisions are made without transparency in some back room, in some corporate boardroom, and we have no say. We have no say.
But the other thing is, it's not a back room. I mean, it's usually, you know, it's some room with a vista of, you know, the whole city of whatever city it's in, and it's gorgeous, and it probably cost a gazillion dollars to build. But the people in that room are not elected officials. The people in that room don't represent me or my interests. The people in that room represent their own interests and their stockholders' interests. It's not democracy.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. But in rebuttal, they're going to argue, hey, we live in a free market society. I mean, we built a big company. Others have built equally large, perhaps even larger companies. As a consumer, you have the absolute right to decide which one of our big companies you want to do business with.
You know what my answer is? You know what my answer is?
I'm ready.
I don't care. You know what? I don't believe, I understand the idea of markets moving the agenda. And I guess I've seen it work sometimes in this country, but mostly I've just seen the Vanderbilts and the Goulds and the other robber barons making a killing, and Zuckerberg's one of them.
It was an idea that was of its time.
Mm-hmm.
Or in some cases, it is the future. But the scary part about the future is, as the senator said, you may end up with two or three companies, period, and your choices are going to get very limited. And what's worse is the amount of information they're going to have about you is going to be existential.
It's not a free market if you only have one or two choices. I learned a lot today. I'm really hoping that this legislation moves through Congress the way that the CFPB did, with perhaps a little less friction, because it is a little, there's fewer players who have as much to lose here. And there's more players who have a lot to lose, and that's Americans. all of us. We all have a ton to lose if we're not able to get some reins on this beast that is big tech.
Without question. And the big difference with this piece of legislation versus so many others is it has significant and deep bipartisan support.
Yep. It's time for a tinfoil swan.
Our paranoid takeaway to keep you safe on and offline.
So, Bo, is that situation of yours resolved? Or?
You know, you should actually be a guest on the show.
Yeah, hilarious. Listen, it's basically over. I'm still getting about 100 emails a day, but the worst of it seems to be a past now.
So let's pretend you are a guest. What happened?
I mean, whatever. I got subscription bombed.
And robbed. I believe they hit a credit card, right?
Yeah. No, they did.
Yeah, that's the worst.
In the best case scenario, subscription bombing is a nuisance, but it can be disastrous if you don't know what's happening.
Okay, so it's 9:05 a.m. I start getting a steady stream of incoming email notifications. Mind you, I was driving, and think jackpot. It was like a slot machine. Ding, 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 ding.
Wait. You read email when you're driving?
What? You read email?
Okay. Anyway, 9:07, I get a text.
And you're still driving.
Okay, whatever. Siri reads it to me.
Charge alert. Card ending in 555 was not present for $177.80 transaction at Boost Infinity.
Let me get this straight. You got boosted at Boost?
Wow, you're killing it today, man. It's been 2 minutes. I got 1,000 emails, I think, something like that. And there was something from a German cosmetic company. I was confused. There was a few emails from French places. Email list subscriptions.
To bury your transaction alerts, right? So you called your credit card company, end of story.
Well, a week later and the subscription emails are still coming. Otherwise, yeah, the end.
So Travis, what should people do if they're subscription bombed?
Kind of the same thing that you should do in the face of any other kind of scam. Stay calm, immediately start looking for the transaction or account security alerts that the bombing is trying to make you miss.
You gotta move fast.
Well, you also have to stay focused. Check all your financial accounts throughout the day. And if the email becomes too much for you to handle, you might have to abandon that email address.
But keep checking your accounts. And I think I know the answer, but I gotta ask. Is there no way to stop the bots from signing you up for email in the first place?
Nope.
There's no silver bullet. And if you suddenly just get this massive torrent of emails coming in, you should assume that you've gotten got, that a scammer has your credit card information and your email address.
Because they buy this as a set on the dark web.
Mm-hmm. And that's one reason why breach notifications are so important. You need to know this when it happens. You need to know when your information's been compromised.
Call your credit card company and stay alert. And that's our tinfoil swan.
What the Hack with Adam Levin is a production of Loud Tree Media. You can find us online at adamlevin.com and on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Adam K. Levin.